You are listening to www.infinitesmile.org. Enjoy these Zen-inspired talks given by Michael McAllister, followed up by question and answer exchanges with groups of his students.
An awakened being never moves away from the thing we call the big self. We have two versions of the self that we've discussed in this practice. Suzuki Roshi used to talk about this a great deal. We have the small self and the big self. The small self being the contracted self, the self that is identified with form, the ego, the sense that feels separate. And the big self, on the other hand, is that which is expansive rather than being contracted. Instead of being locked into form, it is open as an expression of emptiness. And an awakened being orients her life from the big self. She never, ever moves from this big self. Even when he might use the small self, his orientation comes from the big self, comes from emptiness, comes from the expansion, comes from openness, comes from a soft heart, a soft mind, and a soft belly, one that is open. So the enlightened among us don't really move away from the big self, just like you and I and everybody else never moves away from their own heart or liver or lungs. You do not move away from your lungs. They're always there. The big self is always there. E motion, e movere, Latin for disturbance. Sound itself coming from silence. Light coming from darkness. If we orient ourselves towards that which is infinite and that which isn't confined by mind, we awaken. So any movement of body or mind or time is non-enlightened activity as long as stillness isn't consciously realized by what is moving. Whatever it is that moves is unenlightened, in other words. Whatever it is that moves is an unenlightened expression if it isn't consciously informed by stillness, consciously informed by the big self. So when we do this, when we orient ourselves from stillness, when we orient ourselves from the big self, we effortlessly have this opportunity to rest in an empty field of awareness while being totally present all the time. We're there because we realize that we're not there. We realize that the small contracted self is not what is governing or ruling this process. We realize, in fact, that we are an amazing expression and a timeless expression of the infinite. So what keeps us from this? What keeps us from being still? Surprise, movement. You know, I mean, it's not rocket science. It's a very, very simple little thing there. What keeps us from stillness? Movement. What is movement? Movement is anything that either reaches towards or avoids any situation. Okay? All right? And we can catch ourselves doing this all the time. When is it that we move? All right? Even when given the opportunity for total stillness, conscious stillness with a group of people who are endeavoring to do the same exact thing, do you still move? What is it that creates that movement? Is it discomfort? Is it physical? Is it emotional? Is it fear? Anything that causes you to move, actually, and I know this is really hard for the separate self sense, the small self, the ego. It's very hard for the ego to hear. But anything that causes you to move, causes you to either reach or avoid, is the activity of ego. It is the activity of mind. The ego is desperate for these moves, and we can equate moves with change. And change, quite simply, is either resistance to what is or an indulgence to what is. It's either one of those two things. And it's going to want to somehow embrace that type of mobility in order to survive. If it becomes still, if the separate self-sense becomes still, and there's a realization of this stillness, what happens is the ego, or small self, begins to become rather insignificant in the light of the big self. And I know you've heard me talk about this before. We've discussed this again and again and again, but I think it's very, very, it's a critical step in the practice to begin to embody, consciously embody stillness. So any of these moves kind of show up in a couple of different ways. They're all under, if you will, the umbrella of change, a desire for change, but just a couple that I wanted to kind of cover. And the most obvious among these is there is a problem. The small self convinces us that there's a problem. There's something wrong. All right. This move, actually, it's just mind, as are all these examples that I'm going to give you. Actually, any bit of discomfort that you ever feel is just mind. Any bit of negativity that you ever feel is just mind. But when we feel that there's something wrong, when we can take a situation or we can take one of life's circumstances and we can give it a label and we can say, okay, there's something wrong. There's something wrong here. This is a problem. We have given birth. We've given fuel to the egoic move or the contracted grip. And if the problem is intense enough, if it's intense enough, if the grip is intense enough, there's a hardening. There's an ossification, a spiritual ossification. Instead of a softening, it's a hardening. And this always keeps the ego in charge. Again, ego does not want to hear this, but just, you know, hear this from directly from the mouths of every single sage that ever lived. There are no problems. There are circumstances, but there are no problems. You have circumstances that might require a certain type of response in order to be an appropriate response. You might have to do a little of this. You might have to do a little of that. You might have to really open yourself to the big self, open the small self to the big self, and create an opportunity for an appropriate response to unfold. But there are no problems. Problems are stories. They're scripts that the ego loves performing on the stage of mind. Life happens. Life happens. No need to make it into a problem. Circumstances are there. How are you going to respond? Those among us that are awakened respond appropriately because they orient themselves in the big self as opposed to the contracted, form-bound small self. Another way that we move, the ego moves, is we need to change something about the way I do things. That little dialogue, ego loves that one. I need to change something about me. The minute ego goes into that space, I need to change something about me. Typically, it's a resistance to what is or an indulgence into what is in a way that takes the small self into a position of power. It feeds it. There's something I need to change about me. There is absolutely nothing that you need to change about you. You do not need to become anything other than what you already are, a divine expression of the infinite. And so really what a meditative or stillness practice, be it Zen, Vedanta, contemplative Christian, Kabbalah, whatever it is, a stillness practice really means that we become more of what we truly are, which is the big self. We become more of that. It's in closer proximity. There's a conscious connectedness in our experience with the big self. Third area where we move, or where change is, or where we meet with resistance or indulgence, is a need to understand. I need to understand means essentially the I, or the separate self sense, needs to have something to stand on in order to feel okay, in order to avoid a problem, in order to change something about itself. This isn't to say that anything is wrong with the intellect, because there's not. The intellect is just fine. It's a wonderful tool. But again, if we become tooled by the intellect, or if we live in the intellect, we lose sense and lose room for the spaciousness of an open heart. So the mind, in other words, we want to understand, the mind is always trying to manage an evolution that is totally beyond its ability to even begin to fathom. Awakening is awakening from the contraction of mind. So mind will never be able to understand it. And if it keeps trying to understand it, what do? What happens is we keep getting locked into the same disease. We're locked into the same space. And so that's why I use the phrase, getting beyond mind. And the way to do that, quite simply, is to observe it. Witness it. Be aware of what the mind is doing. The last way that I'm going to cover tonight that the mind moves is when we need more of something. This is obviously really common. We always need more love, right? We always need, in my case, I always need more chocolate chip cookies. Even when I've had too many, I need more, okay? The mind will always put us in a place of needing more of something. And as long as we think that this is a fundamental truth, that we always need something extra, there is a move away from the truth of the big self. We are moving away from the infinite expansion and into a deeper hardening of contraction when we think we need more of something, when we want, when we really want, when we obsess, when we are deeply interested, when we are fascinated. It's not to say that those things shouldn't be allowed in your life. It's to say that the relationship we have to all those aspects of mind need to change in order for us to awaken. They need to change in order for us to awaken. You can't hang on to anything and expect an enlightened awareness. So our practice then is to recognize that there is nothing extra needed. We need nothing extra. Positively, nothing is needed for this practice to unfold. When we recognize that there is nothing extra that is needed, that we can just open to what is, there's a chance for an awakened realization to unfold through our stillness. in stillness, there's a very deep, very profound realization that is, nothing extra is needed in me or in anyone else or in any other place or in any other time. Nothing extra is needed. To get there, we really have to find an authentic experience of stillness. And we endeavor as a group, as I've said, as a group, we endeavor to do this collectively. Hopefully when you're driving, you try to do it. You try to be still. Hopefully when you're looking into someone's eyes, you find stillness. It's very hard to look into the black pupils of someone's eyes and not see that which is still within you. So, this authentic stillness will show us always, it will always show us the already fully created wholeness of being deeply human. And when stillness soaks itself into this spongy body and mind of ours, when we just keep pouring a little bit at a time, just pour a little bit, and we just really start to soak it up, all form sees that its essence is uncreated and unmoving. And in this unmade, uncreated vastness, enlightenment recognizes itself through our moment-to-moment experience. Whether we are going to Starbucks for a cup of coffee or Pete's, or we're washing the dishes, or we are stepping in dog poop, or we are watching someone close to us die. No matter what the circumstance is, there's an ultimate life that carries everything equally and shines on everything equally. And all we have to do is get out of the way. All we have to do is get out of the way and be quiet. All we have to do is be still. That's all we have to do. It's the only thing necessary for the small self to expand into the big self. Is the conscious realization of stillness. So here's what we do. You know, we consciously and compassionately and mindfully support each other's efforts to get out of our own way and everybody else's. We get out of ours and others' own ways, and what is revealed is an inexhaustible supply of love that has always, always, always been our home from the beginning.
You often say, well, I've said this before, I'm repeating myself, it does me good to hear it repeated again. Because the path to enlightenment, awareness, is strewn with so many roadblocks. I noticed just listening to you, my mind got engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what I was hearing about its tricks. Particularly the one, oh, there's something that can be fixed about it. Yeah.
Right.
And I say, okay, that's good. And then about three breaths later, I said, oh, that's right. All I have to do is fix this.
Right. Yeah.
So it's good to hear.
Yeah, Paul, have you noticed that among the most contagious things is unconsciousness? It's habitual. And it has a very potent inertia. It's and then what happens is, if we're not careful, it becomes Sisyphean. It becomes this roll that boulder up, up, up. It's, you know, Laurel and Hardy with that piano. And the thing is, there's a driveway that goes to the front of the house. You don't need to lift the piano up the stairs. I mean, you can, you know? But it's such a precious irony at the end of that film. It's one of my favorite films of all time, and I think it really is about spiritual practice. We spend all this time pushing the piano up the stairs with our friend or our partner or our antagonist or our teacher or whatever. And what happens to the boom, 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 keeps going right back down the hill. And it's another fine mess, you know? And then we realize at the end, oh, you just drive the truck around to the front of the house. The front of the house that is inviting us with an open door is all things. Every circumstance, every single circumstance provides you with just the yellow brick road to opening. Yeah? Sure.
You mentioned unconsciousness. It's not like you're stationary. I mean, it's like you've got an automatic pilot in your unconsciousness.
You're right, because unconsciousness is what moves. You put anything on automatic pilot, I'm assuming you're moving. Yeah?
Cruise control.
Yeah. Without a driver. Yeah. No, it's a great, you articulated that beautifully. I think it's really true. I mean, don't go on cruise control. Get out of the vehicle. Okay? And that doesn't mean you destroy the vehicle. The vehicle's not even there. You don't have to destroy anything. Yes?
So much of my image of how one accomplishes what you're describing in that stillness is like monks who live away from everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
So to have an image of us functioning in our lives every day and being bombarded with invitations or demands to move,
right,
and still maintain that big self being the center,
mm-hmm,
it's harder to envision that.
Sure, because the mind wants to envision it. Okay? And the best way I can describe that would be anytime you've had an experience of what in Zen we call no mind, then you know right in the middle, you know firsthand, right in the middle of great activity, there can be stillness. I'll relate a personal story to you. When I was around 9 years old, I was watching a thing on the Olympics, you know, talking about great Olympic heroes, and I remember seeing this film of the Ethiopian runner, Abibi Bakila, who would run barefoot. And so he would be running barefoot through the streets of, I guess it was Rome where he set the Olympic record. And I could be wrong on this, but I remember as a kid watching him run into the stadium on this film, and it was in slow motion with this beautiful music in the background, and I just broke down. I just wept, you know, and I was very concerned, of course, not to be such a wussy and weeping at what I was seeing. But what was it that I was seeing? I was seeing stillness personified and embodied through great activity. That's my core essence. It's yours too. It's everybody. It's all beings. And this is what resonates within us. What resonates within us is when we see what's true. When we hear something that takes us out of the constriction of time or of mind. And so, Mary, yeah, you can be in the middle of great activity. I'm sure childbirth was an experience that was transcendent. And I don't mean to articulate what your experience is like, but it, you know, there are moments that we have that go beyond, that go past what we can quantify and belittle. I would propose that it's not only that you don't feel time, but you are not in mind either. If there is no time, there is no mind. And if there is no mind, there is no time. There is only the ever-present now. There is stillness informing the activity in those moments. Thanks for coming tonight.
Thank you for joining us. For more information about either the Infinite Smile Sangha or Michael McAllister, check out our website at www.infinitesmile.org.